We are happy to welcome Governor Scott Walker to start off our state capitol report this hour. He'll be with us until about 20 minutes after, so if you have a question for him, not a political speech or a personal attack, please, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lots of folks have already posted questions on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 15th. We will also recap last week's recall elections in Wisconsin and preview the two that are happening tomorrow with our state government reporter Sean Johnson and reporters covering the races involving Democratic State Senators Robert Wirch and Jim Holprin. That'll come up a little later in our state capitol report. First, though, Governor Scott Walker joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be with you.
It's nice to have you with us. I saw on TV that you were at the game on Friday night. How about them Brewers?
Yeah, unbelievable. Actually, a great game, too. Prince Fielder and Ryan Braun hit back-to-back homers, and McGee thought he was going to hit a third. So it was kind of nice to just do something normal for a Friday night.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch them win. Now to something maybe a little less pleasant. Should Democratic State Senators Wirch and Holprin be recalled tomorrow?
Well, that'll ultimately be up to the voters. I mean, it's certainly, our campaign, even through last Tuesday, we didn't spend a lot of time specifically campaigning for individual candidates either last Tuesday or this Tuesday, but it was really about the point that our reforms are working, that we talked about fixing the economy and fixing our financial mess, and since the beginning of the year, that's where we've been focused, and the good news is, the reforms are working. 39,000 plus net new overall new jobs in the private sector since the beginning of the year. That's double the national average in terms of job creation in this country. And the reforms are working. We balanced the budget without raising taxes. We ultimately have seen school districts and even places, whether it's a big city like the city of Milwaukee or small towns all across the state, the reforms are actually helping them net savings, avoid layoffs, protect middle-class taxpayers, and that's really more than anything the campaign I've had is to get that message out.
Yeah. What message are you taking, though, from the recall last week of Republican Senators Dan Kopanky and Randy Hopper?
Well, of those six districts, those were the two, particularly Kopanky, overwhelmingly Democrat. Hopper's district was one where a few years ago he barely won by a handful of votes and just lost. I think the big surprise in the Capitol was not that either of them lost, but how close the Hopper race was in the end. And in a couple of the critical races, you know, the 2008, the last time these senators stood for election, Alberta Darling and Sheila Harsdorff both had tough races. Both of them won by larger margins last Tuesday than they did the go-around before that. So what I took from all six of those races was that voters wanted us to focus on fixing the economy, fixing the budget, and continue to do what we were doing there. But not so much from the outcome as much as just from the last couple of months of touring the state while these campaigns were going on. The but is that I think voters wanted it very clearly, wanted us to find ways to work together. And if we can work together, I just caught the tail end of the newscast there. Mining may very well be one of those bills where we've been working for months with Bob Jelk, the state senator from the far northwest, but it's going to be more than that. It's going to be things like venture capital. It's going to be education reform. There's a whole plethora of issues out there that ultimately we don't want to see a 17-16 vote on. We want to see 25, 30 or more senators as well as a good bipartisan section of the state assembly vote for these measures. And I think that's what voters also said, too. Get together, find a way to work together to get the state working again.
Yeah, you have said that you want to focus on jobs and bipartisanship. Now, James on Facebook asks, can you ask him for specifics on how he plans to work with Democrats? It's kind of difficult to believe that after 8 months, he's suddenly decided to be bipartisan. If he wanted to be bipartisan, he could have started on day one, and he could have avoided the Republican safe haven redistricting bill that he signed last Tuesday.
Well, a couple different things. One, I'd go back to the comment about starting on day one. We did. Largely overlooked by much of the national media focus on this, but people forget in January and February, up until the budget repair bill came out, nearly every piece of legislation in our special session on jobs did have bipartisan support, whether it was Tim Cullen helping to lead the way and making the case for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation as an alternative to the former way of doing things in the Department of Commerce, whether it was changes in health savings accounts, whether it was a whole long list of items we pass bills on a bipartisan basis, and we continue to do that. In fact, on Election Day last Tuesday, I was signing into law a change in Wisconsin's tax and criminal financing districts that make it easier, particularly down in Kenosha County, as businesses are coming up from Illinois. It made it easier to make that change and bring more businesses and jobs into the state. Well, half the people standing behind me, half the lawmakers behind me are Republican, but the other half were Democrat, including Senator Wirtz, who you alluded to, who's up for a recall tomorrow in Kenosha County in that district. So it may not get the headlines, it may not get all the attention, but we have been before. We'll continue to do it now. Obviously, there's a disagreement over the budget repair bill and over the budget, but remember, even 2 years ago, there was a disagreement over the state budget then, with Democrats voting yes and Republicans voting no. This is not uncommon. For us, the timing to work together even more so now is a good time to do that, because the legislative session is always the most contentious in the first 6 months because of the budget. That has passed. We move forward. And some of the specifics are things like the whole measure of venture capital. We have some of the greatest research. In fact, as an academic institution, the University of Wisconsin is only second in the country in terms of the more than $1 billion of academic research and development that we have here at the UW. Well, that's something that we need to take even more steps in taking all that talent and transferring that into new startup companies that create jobs here. We do a tremendous job, and we've got the second university research park opened up, but we've got to do more to make sure that there's venture capital so those businesses stay here instead of going out to Boston or the West Coast. That's something that there's a very much a bipartisan interest in. Another good example is on education reform. Tony Evers, the state superintendent of public instruction, and I have been working since earlier this year on a reading initiative, and we just started in the last couple months on a new school accountability system that would take the place of No Child Left Behind and really provide a Wisconsin model for how to replace that and do that better. Those are things where we brought in educators, teachers, parents, advocates, business leaders, folks from the university system, you name it, a broad cross-section of folks with an interest in the future of public education, and as well as all forms of education in the state of Wisconsin. Well, we've shown long before Tuesday's vote last week that Tony and I can work together, and we brought a panel that can work together. I think we can transfer that same format over towards working with the legislature with both political parties.
And Tony Evers will be our guest on Thursday at 7 o'clock, so we'll talk more about that then. Sarah on Facebook writes, if we are creating so many jobs in Wisconsin, why is our unemployment rate going up?
Actually, that's a great question, because we went from 7.4 to 7.6, even though in the month of June we saw a net new job increase of 9,500. The reason for that is about 15,000 more people in that month reentered the workforce. And so it sounds counterintuitive, but the reality is that's because the optimism that there actually are more jobs in the economy has taken a lot of people that had given up and seen that they're reentering the workforce. And remember, these numbers aren't my administration's solely. These are numbers that the U.S. government, Department of Labor, through what's called the Bureau of Labor Statistics, puts out every month. And that is exactly what's happened, is even though the 7.6 is obviously much better than the national average, a little bit over the rate, I should say, which is a little bit over 9%, that's why you have a slight tweak, is because there's been such a movement forward, net 9,500 new jobs at a time when states like Illinois to the south in that month saw a net decrease of 7,200. In Wisconsin's case, thankfully, we're seeing major increases in manufacturing. About half of our new jobs in the last 6 months have come in manufacturing, in large part through mid-sized manufacturing companies. That's important because about 19% of our economy is in manufacturing. We've seen a significant increase in tourism-related jobs, particularly in June. That's also important because some of the cynics, when those numbers came out, said, well, those are jobs for kids during the summer. Well, one, a lot of our kids need jobs during the summer, but those numbers don't reflect that. Those are seasonally adjusted jobs. So the new jobs that we saw, particularly in June and in tourism, were permanent jobs. They're, somebody opens up, takes the risk and opens up a new hotel, that hotel manager, that's a permanent job there. That's the kind of job that's counted on there. And the other big thing for us, which is particularly good in Wisconsin, is we've seen more than a 30% increase in agricultural-based exports. And that's really a major untapped market for us is the world needs to be fed, and we obviously know how to do agriculture very well, everything from dairy products, but also corn, soybeans, ginseng, you name it. Cranberries, we're the number one exporter of cranberries. I mean, we do exceptionally well, and we need to build off of that.
A quick call from Dave in Caledonia. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Morning, Dave.
Congratulations on balancing the budget, but did that shift the property tax burden to the local counties and cities, and that has yet to be realized? Is there any truth in that?
Nope. Actually, we put in place a cap. That's a great question, because we put a cap in other states. In fact, Dave, that was one of the things we wanted to do that was incredibly important. Over 40 states across the country have deficits, and nearly every one of the rest of them either did it through massive cuts that either led to massive layoffs of public employees, or it led to massive property tax increases because they pushed off to the local level. We didn't do that because of the reforms we put in place and the caps we put in place on property taxes. We kept property taxes under control for the next 2 years, but we also gave local governments the tools so that instead of having to look at massive layoffs or massive service reductions, they're able to achieve those savings through changes in the benefit structure. That'll help not only this year, but will help long term. So that's a great contrast. You look at Connecticut, for example, laid off 6,500. You look at employees. You look at other states where they've laid off teachers and other local government folks, and many states where, unfortunately, their property taxes have gone up. Thankfully, Wisconsin is one of those where property taxes will be held in check.
What do you say to your critics? What would you like to say to them who are still vowing to mount a recall campaign against you?
Well, I don't know about the folks. Excuse me, about the folks who are vowing to do a recall. Because my guess is there's nothing I could say or say or do that would change their perspective. But I think for the vast majority of other people who just objectively are looking, trying to sort through fact from fiction here, is I'd ask people to take a look at the facts. If you look across the state, I mean, it was interesting. On the eve of the election, a story came out in the Milwaukee paper about how the city of Milwaukee was going to see a net savings of at least $11 million, probably closer to $17 million this next year. And the reporter asked the city officials, they said, well, you were all saying that the governor was to blame back in June for what you feared was going to be a big hole for the city. Doesn't he deserve some credit now that you realize it's actually going to be a net savings? And, of course, there was all kind of moving around on that particular. Well, I'm not looking for credit for me personally, but I am looking for people to see as they look at the fact that the reforms are working, and not just at cities, whether it's a school district where my kids go to school, Wauwatosa, where one of our school board members pointed out the other day that when kids come back, the schools will be the same, the teachers will be there, the programs will be there, and in some cases, because of the savings, there'll be new things there, whether it's in Brown Deer or New Berlin or Fond du Lac or Kokona. Kokona obviously being one of the best examples where they took in $1.5 million deficit and now have a surplus. They're able to hire more teachers because of those savings, lower classroom size, and ultimately put money aside for merit pay. My hope would be at least the vast majority of people in the state would look at those facts and look at what I ran on last year in the larger context on the economy and say, we probably more than anything were elected because of our goal of creating 250,000 jobs in the private sector by 2015. We're well on our way towards exceeding that goal. And as I mentioned, we're double the rate of growth at the national level when it comes to jobs. I think that's what people want us to focus in on. As long as we do that and continue to do that in a way that invites more people to come in. You know, one of the questions you had earlier was specifics. I'd add one more thing on working across party lines. We met with more than 70 lawmakers this last month, Democrat, Republican alike, and created a list of things I'd like to work together on coming into the fall. That's something I'm going to be sitting down with legislative leaders in both political parties the coming week on and trying to figure out, start small, work with things that are easy to work together on, and then build up to the big things.
One more quick question before we let you go,
sure.
Governor. Does Texas Governor Perry getting into the presidential race give you any ideas or any thoughts on the GOP field right now?
Well, I think having another quality candidate is good. In his case, if jobs are the issue, and I think certainly at the state level, my guess is in the presidential race, jobs will be the focal point. Governor Perry's got a pretty compelling case. I mean, Texas in the last decade's created, as my understanding is, more jobs than all the other states combined. Well, even the last couple of years, they continue to, and even their percentage of oil-related jobs are less today than it was 10 years ago. So they're not all just oil, energy-related jobs. And if he's been able to do it there, I think myself and other voters would be interested in hearing how he would plan to take that kind of success there and apply it to the federal government, because there's no doubt about it, what we need is more help when it comes to jobs.
But you're not going to throw your head into the ring.
No. We got our hands full. I'm sorry. I didn't take that the way your question was. No, in our case, the only campaign I'm worried about over the next couple of years is the campaign of creating 250,000 jobs in the state.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Joy, good to be with you.
Governor Scott Walker. We'll talk more about state politics as our state capitol report continues in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We now welcome in Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson to talk about the recalls and other state politics. We just heard from Governor Scott Walker, who reacted to the recalls and other developments. And now let's welcome in Sean Johnson. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
So, any reaction to what the governor had to say there?
I guess you've heard him say several times over the past week that there's going to be a push for bipartisanship now, and you know, I guess the question is, what is the measure of that? I mean, he did mention there were some jobs bills in the special session, you know, before he introduced his collective bargaining plan that did get bipartisan support, and that's true. You know, in talking with, you know, for example, Senator Jouk last week about what does it mean to be bipartisan, he said it's not just throwing stuff out there and expecting Democrats to vote for it. It's advancing some of our bills, you know, maybe even a Democratic bill in some cases. So that's something you didn't see in the first, first several months of this year. That never happened. And, you know, on the hot button issues of the day, and even back in that special session on jobs, there was a bill on tort reform that limited who people could sue, with businesses or nursing homes, things like that. There wasn't Democratic input on that, which was probably the most controversial bill of the jobs special session. And then, of course, the budget repair bill and the budget bill themselves. Those were strict party line votes, and we all see, you know, how divided people were on those. So there's a long way to go, I think, to hit that that mark of both parties working together and Democratic bills being authored, advanced in the legislature seems, like maybe a stretch given what we've seen so far. But the margins are different now. And, the governor is facing a different climate now, different circumstances, given that he could face an election, not, you know, three and a half years from now, but potentially in a year, for example.
Yeah. That 17-16 majority that Republicans have following the recall elections last week, presuming that doesn't change with tomorrow's recalls.
Yeah, and it could.
Does that moderate the legislature in any way?
Maybe. I mean, it empowers every Republican in that caucus, in the Senate Republicans, you know, if Republicans want to advance their agenda, they need everybody's votes. And so that includes somebody like a Dale Schultz, who is the lone Republican to vote against the collective bargaining bill. And that's a refrain you heard from Democrats after the results of last Tuesday that, oh, they didn't flip the majority, but they have a pro-union majority in the Senate right now. So somebody like Dale Schultz has more of a voice right now. And Senate Republicans, you know, leadership has to accommodate him if they want to have his support on controversial issues. They also have to accommodate, in some cases, the more conservative members of their caucus, who maybe didn't quite have the leverage they needed before, on some bills. Their vote is also important in a 17-16 environment. So it changes everything, really. But in fact, the who's in charge hasn't changed at all. I mean, Republicans are still going to run the legislature and the governor's office coming out of this. And if they want to continue to advance, you know, their agenda, the only ones stopping them are themselves.
Luther Olson, one of the Republican state senators who survived his recall attempt last week, said that the results of last week's elections, with the two Republicans being recalled, four retaining their seats, that takes the wind out of the sails in the efforts to recall Governor Walker. Is that how political observers are calling this this election?
I mean, I don't know that it helps efforts to recall the governor, but I the governor even mentioned there's nothing that he can do to sway a certain group of people, that there are going to be plenty of people who want to recall him as soon as possible. And while Democrats and, you know, unions have come up short in these elections this year, you know, the Prosser-Kloppenburg race, conservatives won there. In the, you know, this round of recall elections, Republicans won there. Democrat, if they've shown anything, it's that they are organized and mobilized. And so, you know, you could envision them using that organization power to get the signatures they need to drive an election or to prompt an election. And once that happens, you know, a statewide race is going to be a different race than a race in mostly Republican Senate districts. You know, you're going to tap into different vote centers, and who knows what would happen.
Yeah, only a minute before news. What kind of reaction is State Representative Robin Voss getting on his bill to recall the recall, or to make it harder to recall?
You know, I saw Democratic Minority Leader Peter Barca in the State Assembly saying that, you know, if you want to be bipartisan, this isn't exactly the way to show it. To take away the power of people to voice discontent with their government is not not necessarily the best way to show that you want to work together with us, just because the majority of your members are the ones facing these recall elections.
We'll talk more with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, coming up after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We will also welcome in a couple of reporters who are covering the recall elections tomorrow, with two Democratic state senators facing the voters. This is the Ideas Network. This is our state capitol report. I'm Joy Cardine, along with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson. It is now 7:36 on this Monday, August the 15th. There are two recall elections tomorrow in Wisconsin. Democratic state senators Bob Wirch and Jim Holprin face Republican challengers who are upset the two senators were among the 14 who left the state in February to prevent a vote on the budget repair bill, which, among other things, stripped public employees of most of their collective bargaining rights and limited the power of public unions. In this half of the State Capitol Report, we will hear from two reporters covering the races in their Senate districts, and we will welcome your input, too, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will start with Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Glenn Moberg, who is based in Wausau and is covering the recall election between Democratic State Senator Jim Holprin and Republican Kim Simak in northern Wisconsin. And Glenn joins us by telephone. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Sean.
Yeah, good to have you with us. Now, we talked with Governor Walker in the first half of our state capitol report, and I asked him if he thought either Jim Holprin or Bob Wirch should be recalled, and the governor simply said that's up to the voters. How are voters in your Senate district feeling about this?
Well, this is viewed, I think, as the best shot Republicans have of picking off a Democratic seat, the 12th Senate race. Kim Simak, the challenger, says she's certain she'll win. Jim Holprin says he thinks it'll be very close and go down to the wire. He was hopeful that he would prevail. I saw one opinion poll by a Michigan organization that had Holtbrun up with a two-point lead. I don't know how much you can trust that. Judging from the number of signs that you see on lawns and on the highways, I think you'd have to give the edge to Simic. One of the interesting factors about this, Jim Holtbrun, who's a veteran legislator, he's the only person in these elections to face two recalls. He actually survived a recall election as an assemblyman back in 1990 over tribal fishing rights.
Yeah, that's right. So he's got a little historical perspective. You know, I'm going to bring Sean in a surprise, because during the news, Glenn, we were just talking about crunching the numbers in Holtbrun's Senate district, and Sean, there are some numbers based on the recalls last week
on the earlier elections this year. I mean, mm-hmm. Glenn mentioned this is probably the best shot Republicans have, and you know, There's a reason for that. I mean, you look at how this district went for Governor Walker, about 57% of the vote he got in this district in 2010. If you look at the assembly districts in Holtbrun's Senate district, they're all held by Republicans. All of them voted for Governor Walker. All of them voted for Justice David Prosser in the April Supreme Court election. So you can imagine if there's a 2% lead in an opinion poll that was released. Certainly, that shouldn't make Democrats comfortable in that district by any means, mm-hmm. just given the makeup of the district.
Yeah.
And Holtbrun says he's never comfortable running. All of his races are always close, but he does manage to win elections in a district in an area that leans Republican. And one of the reasons for that is that he takes some conservative stands on a number of issues. For instance, both of these candidates are gun rights advocates. Simic has published children's books, including one called With a Gun by Your Side, that have Second Amendment themes. Holtbrun got a rare Democratic Party endorsement from the National Rifle Association in this race.
Yeah, and what are the issues in this race right now, Glenn? Is it simply the criticism that Holtbrun left the state during February?
Well, that's certainly where Kim Simic starts. Now, she's a Tea Party leader who's the head of an organization called the Northwoods Patriots, and she actually organized the recall drive against Holtbrun. And once the recall was on the ballot, then she had to face a primary challenge from a moderate Republican, Bob Lusso, who's the chairman of the Lincoln County Board. She beat him pretty handily. But that's exactly what she says. He is under fire for the decision to leave the state. We got a press release from her campaign over the weekend that called it a 3-week vacation. Holtbrun, on the other hand, says he understands why some people are upset with him. He says it may cost him his job, but and I want to get this right. He said politics is about choices, and he said, "I chose to side with those who said, don't let them take my rights away from me without a fight." And he says he was working hard the whole time he was away in Madison. So that, you know, that's where it starts. But it's gotten into a whole lot of other things too, including the state of the economy, the budget cuts that are coming up toward to the public schools, and a number of Simic's some of the comments that she's made with the Northwoods Patriots. And there's an effort to paint her as an extremist in this race.
Let's take a call from Steve in Trigo. Hello, Steve.
Good morning. In reference to what one of your guests just said, there is a video clip online of Kim Simic telling a Tea Party crowd that while Americans have been focused on Al-Qaeda since 9/11, the real enemy lives among us and is cunning and shrewd in its tactics. And I just think voters in that Senate district and the people of Wisconsin need to hear from candidate Simic who she thinks that enemy is.
Do you know anything about this, Glenn?
Well, that's one of a number of comments that have been brought forward in this campaign, based on things that she said or she wrote as a leader of the Northwoods Patriots. There was a comment that was turned up by Talking Points Memo that Kim Simic put put on a conservative blog, the Patriot Action Network, where she made comparisons of the public schools to Nazi Germany, saying that if she was a parent today, she would pull her kids out of the public schools because she doesn't trust what they're being taught. Jim Holpern brought that up in their only face-to-face forum, which was a radio debate hosted by WRJO Radio up in Tomahawk, and said, Kim, you've been contemptuous of the public schools all through your life in this district. So, her record as a Tea Party leader has become an issue. At least Mr. Holpern is trying to make it one.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn, anything else that that you're following or that we should be aware of about this race tomorrow?
Well, this is really a bare knuckles race, and I think the closeness of it is shown by the amount of money that's gone into it. You can't watch TV in the Wausau Rhinelander market without seeing at least one negative ad in every commercial break. Holpern's ads also target Simic for not paying state income tax on her businesses for several years, and that's really become the focus of a lot of the campaign ads. She's fired back, calling him a liar, saying that she didn't owe the state any money because her businesses were struggling. Then Holpern came back and said the ads are fair because she's campaigning on how bad the business tax climate allegedly is in the state. And again, I wrote down a quote from Holpern. She has a nice home, drives nice cars, and has a condominium and others of life's luxuries. How can she not pay taxes? He says it's obvious taxes on businesses aren't as bad as she would have us believe. She says the anti-business climate is why Holpern needs to be recalled.
This one will be an interesting one to watch. Glenn, thanks very much for being with us.
All right, thanks, Joy.
Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Wausau. He's covering the recall election between Democratic State Senator Jim Holpern and Republican Kim Simic in the 12th Senate District tomorrow. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, stays with us. Sean, anything else about this race in the 12th between these two? This is the one where Republicans might have a pretty good chance of taking over a seat.
I mean, the thing that if it may be a given, but this is a Northwoods, largely rural Senate seat. Turnout's going to be harder to gauge or to drive. Maybe you don't have urban centers there where Democrats can fall back on and say this is our base. We're going to get the vote out here in this large city. It's more spread out than that. So you know that's something that also makes it hard to gauge. Maybe, but you know, as Glenn mentioned, Senator Holpern has won races in this district before. And while it looks like a Republican district, Holpern took it over for a Democratic state senator, too. A conservative Democrat, certainly, but it's one that's been in the Democratic hands for a while now.
We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We will welcome in a reporter for the Kenosha News who is covering the recall between Democratic State Senator Bob Wirch and Republican candidate Jonathan Steitz coming up in just a moment. It's going to be a sunny day today in the state of Wisconsin. There is a chance of afternoon showers and storms in far north and northeast Wisconsin today. Highs will be in the low 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, is with us. And joining us now is Joe Potenti, who is a reporter for the Kenosha News. He's covering the recall election between Democratic State Senator Bob Wirch and Republican candidate Jonathan Steitz in Wisconsin's 22nd Senate District. And Joe joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are the big issues in this race?
You've got two candidates here who couldn't possibly be more different from one another, it would seem. You've got a Bob Wirch, a local native who's held elected office here for 25 years and touts his experience as a factory worker and somebody who has sort of risen through the ranks of politics down here. And you've got Jonathan Steitz, who's a relative newcomer to the area in so much as he's lived here for about 10 years, and he's a capital markets attorney in Chicago, and they bring very different agendas and very different backgrounds to the race.
Well, I'll say, is the big issue the fact that Wirch left the state with the Democratic 14, or is there more than that?
That's certainly the issue that got this all started, and it's still something that comes up frequently. But along the way in the campaign, I think the way these two candidates have cast themselves, Wirch has certainly tried to show himself as the defender of the middle class, and Stites has tried to cast Wirch as being out of touch and sort of not with the times for the district and for the state.
Mm-hmm. Sean Johnson is with us, and I know, Sean, you did, as you did in the 12th Senate District, did a little bit of number crunching. What did you find out for the 22nd Senate District?
And this was with the help of Charles Franklin at UW-Madison. It's not quite as clear a picture in terms of how the district leans if you look at election results from last year's gubernatorial race. Governor Walker won a couple of these assembly districts in the Senate district, the one of them just narrowly. And then in the Supreme Court race, Justice Prosser lost a couple of these districts. So and you have a very strong Democratic assembly district in there. So a strong base for Senator Wirch. Not quite as clear cut of a picture in terms of how the district leans when you look at it that way. And, you know, there's a solid Democratic base there, certainly, in the Kenosha area Senate district.
Well, Joe, what's your take on the political leanings of the district?
Bob Wirch in recent debates the last few days has pulled out a talking point saying that Stites should consider suing the Republican Party for non-support. He's noted the fact that they haven't been in here doing very much for him, and he certainly sees that as a sign that he's viewed as having the upper hand in this district. It's certainly a district that has been held by Democrats as far back as anybody can remember, and it's a place where organized labor probably has more feet on the ground than just about anywhere else in the state at this point.
Yeah, have there been any, forums, debates, joint appearances between the candidates?
Yes, they had actually two debates in 12 hours on Thursday night and Friday morning, and then they appeared on television in Milwaukee together on Sunday. And they certainly sounded consistent throughout those three appearances. They sort of hung to the same talking points and gave voters a clear picture of what they represent, I think.
Yeah. So the governor told us that voters should decide as to whether Holprin or Wirch are recalled tomorrow. What's your sense of the voters in the district? Do you have a strong sense if they're going one way or the other?
It would appear, again, that Wirch has the upper hand. He certainly does in terms of fundraising. Like your previous reporter said, just signs out on the street, you certainly see a lot more for Bob Wirch than for Jonathan Stites. But at the same time, Republicans have said for years that this is a changing district. This is an area where we have a lot of population growth, a lot of people moving up here from Illinois. It's become more of a bedroom community, and the Republicans have always said that that favors them, that that's yet to bear out in any of these races, but you never know when it might.
Anything else before we let you go, Joe, about the race there?
Something interesting about this race is that, and this isn't talked about much, with the Republican redistricting plan, if that's upheld in court, either one of these guys is going to lose this job next year unless he moves. They've both been redistricted out of the district.
That's one of those fun facts. So we'll talk a little bit more with Sean about that. Thanks very much, Joe, for being here.
Thank you.
Joe Potenti is a reporter for the Kenosha News. He's covering the recall election between Democratic State Senator Bob Wirch and Republican Jonathan Stites. All right, Sean, well, we still have a few more minutes to talk about this, and we also have a few more minutes if listeners have questions about not only the recall elections tomorrow, but the message sent from the recall elections of two Republican state senators last week, and maybe the potential recall of Governor Walker. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Sean, any react to what Joe had to say about this race between Wirch and Stites?
Yeah, he mentioned the redistricting, the remap, and that either one of them would be out of the district if they were to win. And who knows, I don't know if Senator Wirch would want to move, but if he were, that district, the Kenosha district, becomes strongly, safely Democratic under the new map. It's sort of the trade-off that Republicans made as they made other Milwaukee area Senate districts strongly Republican as they packed this this Kenosha Senate district, made it basically unwinnable for Republicans. So whether it's Senator Wirch or another Democrat, whoever runs there in the next regularly scheduled election, probably going to be senator if they're Democrat. In the Holpern district, it looks like, I believe, the district gets, you know, slightly more Republican under the new map. So that's one where if Senator Holpern wins tomorrow, he'll probably have another tough fight in the next race, but he would regardless anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about those redistricting maps, because we talked about them during the last mm-hmm. day Capitol report, and it was unclear as to whether the governor had to either sign them or veto them or not sign them last Tuesday, and he signed them.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of focus last Tuesday, obviously, on these recall elections, and he signed them on that Tuesday afternoon. So the new congressional map, the new legislative map, they are now law, and it's a question at this point of whether they survive a court challenge. I think the likely venue that Democrats are going to want to, you know, attack these in is federal court. There was already one lawsuit dismissed in federal court, although that was targeted more at the existing maps, saying that the legislature needed to move fast to draw new ones because the old maps were no longer any good. That one's moot now. But I think you could expect to see a lawsuit probably in federal court, possibly having to do with the Voting Rights Act and whether this minimizes or splits up the minority vote in the way that Republicans have redrawn the maps. But there are other issues that they could bring up as well.
You are going to be co-hosting our election coverage once again tomorrow night, starting at 8 o'clock when the polls close. What are you going to be looking for?
We'll be probably looking up north to see, you know, as returns come in, just what happens. It's hard to read exactly how you watch returns come in from that district. So we'll be watching the statewide totals coming in from the Associated Press.
It sounds like the Wirch district is pretty clearly going to be held by Wirch.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's been ignored. I mean, it seems like there's been campaign activity down there, but it seems, you know, and this is from a Madison vantage point, but it seems like there's a lot more campaign activity in the Holpern district. Certainly, you know, I mean, you saw both sides running ads in that district well before last week's election, for example. You know, mm-hmm. So, I mean, they knew this was going to be a competitive one no matter what happened last week.
Yeah. Should Holpern be recalled, hypothetically, that gives the Republicans then a two-seat or two-vote majority in the state Senate?
Right.
And does that make a whole lot of difference?
They have a little more breathing room. You know, they don't. Somebody like a Dale Schultz has a little less power, or anyone else who wanted to, you know, try to leverage, that one-seat majority to get something they want. Makes it a little harder for individual senators to gum up the works.
Yeah, you know, the governor thinks that the state is recalled out and just wants to move on and create jobs and that sort of thing. His critics, though, are still vowing to mount a recall against him in the final minute we have left.
Yeah, and I think the question that Democrats are grappling with now is one of timing. The governor, they could start circulating recall petitions for the governor in November. And I mean, you could theoretically have a recall election next spring, potentially, you know, next April. There's a lot of reasons why that's difficult, though. I mean, you're talking about circulating petitions during the holidays, talking about circulating petitions during cold weather. And you're talking about holding an election during a more low turnout special election period, which in this year has favored Republicans. So Democrats want to try to, if there's going to be a recall effort against the governor, they want to try to time that with the November 2012 presidential election, which is a high turnout race, which in Wisconsin in recent decades has favored Democrats. It's not an easy task to do that, though. I mean, you got a lot of court battles and challenges that can change the timing of recall elections. Should be an interesting year.
Thank you, Sean. The beat goes on. Thanks. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.